This is side two of part two of the interview with Otha Williams. This is July 29th, 1980. Now, there's one other question I wanted to ask you about the 1940s. When you started using heroin again after the war, were you using speedballs or was it straight heroin?
That was the thing, speedball is it, always is. That's the beauty part of it, the speedball, the heroin and the coke together.
So you were using coke after the war. Were you able to obtain cocaine in Detroit during the period 1939-1941?
Not as readily as you could take, as you could cop heroin, no. No, it wasn't that easy to get.
Very hard
to get cocaine.
It was mainly what might be called medicinal opiates, namely morphine, Dilaudid, in Detroit.
Medicinal opiates. You're right about that.
Do you remember the exact circumstances at the time that you first realized you were hooked? What happened? How did you realize that you'd gone beyond the stage of chipping and that you were now a full-blown addict?
When I woke up, I was living on 140th Street, and I woke up one morning and didn't have no stuff and no money. My nose started running, shortness of breath, stomach cramping, gagging. That's when I realized I was drunk out. But luckily, in that building, you could get anything you want in that building. There's musicians in the building, dealers, pay your mamas. You can get anything you want in there. And at the corner of 140th Street, too, it was a drugstore at that time. The old drugstore was an old man, he was an old dealer. I could get favors. That's when I found strung out there. So I went and got a heap of stuff.
Now this, you realized that you were strung out after your partner died?
I realized when I woke up and didn't have no money.
But that morning when you woke up, that would have been...
After my partner died.
Very late 1946.
Yes.
After November of 46.
Yes, after.
Did your style of life change after you realized you were addicted? Did you stop participating in show business?
Yes, it did change. I didn't stop participating in show business. Actually, I almost got away from it. But I had gotten away from the theatrical world very far away from it because I was ashamed to even come in contact with people that I, like, go downtown to the Rum Boogie, Cafe Society. New York was the mecca of jazz at the time. But all it is, Wing Met Cafe Society, Ben Webster had his group at another club, and Coleman Hawkins had another one. And I had the money and the clothes then to attend all those places, plus sometimes get up and do a number, old time sake. But I started leaving all that alone. I was involved on in taking off and selling.
So after 1946, you supported your habit by dealing. Did you have any other hustles?
I'm a pretty good pool player. Pretty good with deck cards. Too.
So a little three-card money, pool hustle.
Yeah.
But mainly you supported yourself by dealing.
By dealing.
See. How much would you make dealing?
Well, for myself, financially, with my using at the time, so my money wouldn't be but about $150 a night. That's excess money. So the rest of it, I'd be shot it up myself.
So in other words, your excess money was about $150. Well, that's a lot of money. That's close to $1,000 a week sometimes.
Yeah,
excess.
But to like the things that I like, I always did like good clothes, good shoes.
So you never saved anything?
Oh yes, I had two post office accounts. You can't save for $5,000 in a post office. I had two post office accounts. At one time I had $38,000, which they call that nigga rich. I had $38,000 at one time.
Uh-huh.
But it saved in a big way. I never was able to save more. $150,000, $200,000, nothing like that.
So,
go ahead.
How long were you dealing then? This is 19...
I dealt from that then until 51 when the agents came in to me and said they wanted a dance team. It's busy Canfield, so they wanted a dance team and wedding service. Anyway, I told my name Robert Brown, that used to be with White as Lindy Hopper. I told him he learned to act better than anybody ever seen, and he wasn't actually a dancer. He's jitterbug, he was doing that jitterbug thing. But I told him to act. This Dizzy sent us to some club in the Midwest. I'm trying to think where it was at. A beautiful club in decent Chicago, from the South Side. And I told him to act. And that was 51, and he stayed with me. So a couple of years, he went for the Muslim thing. He's in Milwaukee now. He's got him a little concession in a club in Milwaukee that we worked to the Flame Show Bar. Name was Robert. His name is Mahmoud Bashir. That's his Muslim name.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I got back into the theatrical world. And,
so how long was this? How long did you get back into the
theatrical world? I started back in the theatrical world. Then after he split, and I started working by myself until 68. My last professional gig was in 68. I have danced professionally since 1968.
So up until 1968, from about 51 to 1968, you were back in the theatrical world.
Uh-huh.
Did you do any big shows or anything during that time?
No, nothing real big.
What would you do?
Rockheads in Montreal, the Esquire Club in Montreal. The salary was decent for a single dance. I'd make maybe $450. I went up to $700 one time because of my past reputation.
$700 a performance?
Yeah, no, a week.
A week?
A week.
So, now during this period, were you addicted? So, even though you went back into show business, you had to get drugs. How did you get the drugs?
Easily, same way, bad.
Well, you were on the road, so you would have to make connections all over the country.
Definitely, and you can.
Now, when you make connections over the country between 51 and 68, I'd like to know whether there were any differences. Let's say you're in New York City, and you go to a place like Chicago, or you go to Detroit, or you go to Toronto. Were there differences in the quality and the price that you had to pay for heroin in these different places?
Knowing about the difference in prices, before you'd leave New York, you'd get enough money to buy you an ounce yourself. You buy an ounce is the equivalent of, I say, it makes 16 quarters to an ounce.
How much would that cost in 1970?
Back then, the ounce back then would cost something like $850. Yeah, but now an ounce would cost you $1,400, or maybe $2,800 now, maybe.
And you had enough money from your earnings and everything
to buy an OZ.
To buy an ounce.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what would you do? You would take that with you?
No, not all of it. I'd take enough to last. So usually your contract reads as this: 2 weeks for the 2 week option. If people like you, you stay the other 2 weeks, you know? So I'd take enough, I'd take maybe 3/4 with me. That 3/4 is equivalent of 66 spoons, 66/4 spoons, which is maybe like the swing nail, yeah. And that's it. Wouldn't need no more.
That's it. Now, when you were hooked and shooting up, how many times...
Wait, I think we lost the moral of the story. The reason you did that was because the drugs were more expensive in other cities, or because you weren't certain you could make a connection?
Both, because it's more expensive and I wasn't certain of getting a connection there.
Okay, so it was your experience that drugs were consistently cheaper in New York City.
Definitely, yeah.
Why was that?
I don't know. Maybe it's because of so many people in the game. It's so many dealers. You got any direction you look, you got a dealer. It's on your back. Hey man, come on, try my thing. They even give you a half of a quarter. So try this here.
Free enterprise.
Yeah,
huh?
Free enterprise. Try this. And then try this. Now they know that I'm a good buyer. So they give it to you. Try. what they call samples.
But they also knew, when you said dealer, for you to buy an ounce, let's say, an OZ, you wanted good stuff. You wouldn't just go to any dealer on the street, would you? Where would you go? How would you buy it? Would you buy it from a guy in an apartment, a connection that you knew? You were in the business. How would you know where to buy this?
Well, I knew, because it's a fellas, he gave it up when he stopped dealing. He was my main connection. He's an old man. His son is on the run right now. I wish I could use a phony name for him.
Use a phony name?
John.
He's in my age bracket and older than I am. And he got top shelf.
He got top
shelf.
This is a black man?
Yes. And the son behind him came over. His son messed up in Vegas. He's out there throwing $30,000 a week on scrap table. They want to wear this black son that's coming and throw that type of money around. He found out that he was the son of this man that I used, that was my connection.
So in other words, in New York City, you had a man who had connection to really good stuff.
Right.
Whom you trusted, and he would sell you top quality when you went on the road. I said, do you know who controlled the racket in New York City, the drug dealing? When you, let's go back a while, in the between 46 and 50, when you were in New York City selling drugs, did you get the drugs from white people or black people to sell? I mean, you had to get your supply someplace.
Yeah, yes. Most of us white at the time was Cuban.
It was Cuban. So back in the late 40s,
it was Cuban. Two brothers on the east side. Two brothers. One of them's dead now. One's still living.
Did you ever come into contact with the mafia or Casa Nostra in the sale of drugs in New York like you came across in Chicago?
Yes. Especially around 1st Avenue, around 100th Street, yeah.
And that's the Italian part of East Harlem, or was it?
Right. You buy your quantity, they fix your hero sandwich, and wrap it in that thick brown paper and put it into sandwich. And, that's where you did it with them.
Did you have... Did you get your supply from these people also of
yes.
East Harlem?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Would it be fair to say that during 1946-1951 that the people who dealt weight were usually white, but that the people who operated at the lower level, the street dealers, were mainly blacks like yourself or Hispanic people?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Were you ever busted during this period of time?
Yes.
When were you busted?
I was busted in 48. That was for jostling. And didn't need it.
I'm sorry, that was for
jostling.
What?
Jostling, that's pickpocket.
Oh.
48. And my bust for drugs was, let me see. My place was 48 jostling. The bus is hard to remember because I didn't fall that much. I did not fall that much.
So, when you were busted for pickpocketing, you didn't do much time on it?
4 months.
4 months.
Where did you do it?
Over on the rock.
Were you sick in the jail when they put you in the jail?
Yeah.
And, did you get any help?
No.
You had to go cold turkey. How many times in your life were you arrested? Approximately how many times were you arrested?
37, 40. I'd say I've been arrested about six or seven times.
Six or seven times. Now, the first one was in the 30s in Chicago when you were let off. It was a fix. We went into that. Was the second arrest jostling that you had? And you served 4 months. Then, what were the other arrests?
The other arrest was in Philadelphia for possession use. I took the weed for some other people, kid I was working with, and I got a suspended sentence for that. The next one was Captain Ferguson over in Philadelphia helped me as a material witness for 11 and a half months.
Was that a drug charge?
Yes. I was painting this kid's house. Also, I was working for him. And he's got $418 in his pocket. They got what they call that little Mars squad. It was Ivy League. And I'm painting his house. The way these kids, these young cops got into his house. He knocked on the window. We upstairs, and he's so greedy. He's cutting down the thing he got from New York and making the bag smaller, you know, selling to a deputy so you get twice as much money. $5 bag in New York, he can sell it for 12 in Philadelphia. He's greedy. So, it's Hardneal and Murray. Hardneal and Murray, that was the cop's name. Detectives, at least. They pretended to want to use the phone call. This boy's wife was fixing her sister's hair down on the first floor. That's how he got in and came up and busted him. He got $400-some in his pocket and a bed full of stuff. I'm up there, the paintbrush, paint all over me. But Captain Ferguson held me because I wouldn't flip on the boy. He said, Martin, we know it. Also, we know it wasn't yours. So why don't you come on? Well, I'm not built like that. I can't flip.
Was this a black guy who was selling in Philadelphia? In other words, he would come from New York City with the stuff?
He was affiliated.
What were you doing in Philadelphia? What year was this? Do you remember?
This was 66.
Were you on a gig?
I was working for him. I was paying this crib for him.
Paying? This had nothing to do with the show business.
No. Secondary, I'm almost the first place paying
him.
You learned that from your father?
Yes.
Were you living in Philadelphia or just working temporarily?
Living in Philadelphia.
Oh, I see. So New York City was not your base of operations during
No, I did so much more after getting out of the theatrical world. I was working at the pool hall for Jackie Belcher. He used to be at the Renaissance. He played basketball. He was the clown with the Renaissance, like Bruce Keaton was with Harlem Globetrotters. That's how I was put to death at 57.
You said that your last dance job was in 1968, though.
Yes, sir.
But in other words, from between 51 and 68, you were involved with other jobs.
Other jobs, yes.
You would come back to the
if
show.
If I got a gig, I'd take it.
I see, but you would get other jobs.
Like the Uptown Theater in Philly, that was my last gig, the Uptown Theater.
Did you ever, when you were not working on the stage, did you ever go back to dealing?
Between in the
after 1951.
Yes.
Where did you deal, in New York City or in Philadelphia?
Philadelphia.
Wait, let me try to get the dates on Philadelphia. When was the first time that you actually lived in Philadelphia?
57.
57.
Mm-hmm.
And you stayed there until approximately when?
Until 66. I got up in 66 from home break. 57 to 66.
How would you describe your dealing activities in Philadelphia? First, were you living in North Philadelphia?
No, I lived in South Philly. I lived in North Philly for a while because one of the kids there had, his mother gave him a home out there at Moke and Pope. Little Moke's mother, she worked with telephone people and I stayed out there with him. We worked out of the same office, Nat Nazara's office, like 1619 Broadway, the real building.
Uh-huh.
And so I was living with him out there for a while. He and his partner got back together. Remember Moking Poke? It ain't no joke, it's Moking Poke. He had a comedy dance team too. Yeah, but I moved down to the south side, started working for Jackie Belcher at the pool room, and I met two fellas. It was in the nameless way, painting, plastering, sending them by all that type of stuff. And I met them, and we got together. Started doing that work with them, then we come to New York and do a pickup trip. We had me cops cost the money was better. come back to fill in deals.
Oh, I see. So you were taking advantage of the fact that drugs were cheaper in New York City, and so you were acting as a mule, in other words, from New York to Philly.
Right.
Oh, I get you. Now, would you say that most of your income came from dealing, or most of your income came from the painting, or what?
Most of my income came from dealing. Be larger money than dealing.
Painting. So this was not something you did just occasionally. But in spite of the fact that you were dealing in Philadelphia and on a fairly regular basis, you were never busted for dealing. You were only busted for hustling or possession. Never for
jostling.
Hustling,
York,
generically.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. Never for dealing. Never had a bus for dealing. Never.
See, so what was the most time you ever did for anything?
The most time I did was made as material business. That
11 months.
Of the 6 arrests that you had, what was the total amount of time you spent in jail?
I think the total amount of time I spent in jail would be about, it can be somewhere between 1 and 4 years. Between 1 and 4 years, I'd say. Between 1 and 3 years. There was no hell of a lot of time. I never did.
Now, I guess it would be fair to say that from 1951 to 1968, you were a jack of all trades.
Yes.
You'd work in show business, you'd deal a little dope, you'd paint, you'd plaster. Whatever. And would it also be fair to say that during this period of time, you usually had plenty of money to support your habit?
Yep.
And also that money came from dealing.
And I had a good job here, too. I got a good work record. I was down Mid-City Hardware on 30th Street, between Broadway and 8th. I worked there for a long time.
Where was this?
Downtown here in New York.
What
Mid-City
did you do?
Hardware. I was delivering.
Was this in the 1950s?
This was in the 60s.
After you came back from Philadelphia?
Yes, after I left Philadelphia, I came back in 66.
66.
I got a job out of an agency down here on Chamber Street.
How much would you make handling
that? Oh, well, my salary was something like, after takeout, I had something like $90-some bring home pay. Then I got tips supplying Keaton Brothers. I went up as far as 48th Street. As far east is 3rd Avenue, as far down is 14th Street, as far west is 9th Avenue. Servicing big stores.
And how much would you make with the tips?
Tips, especially during Christmas time, tips are very good. So I make $400-$500.
A week?
No, seasonal.
Seasonal.
Keaton Brothers, Anita's Lingerie, things like that.
So. You usually didn't have to worry where your next shot was coming from. You would either have money available, or you'd have a stash, or you'd
have a connection.
Right.
You never bought street stuff, from what you told us. I mean, you never bought, like, on the corner, on the see a guy selling stuff.
No.
You never bought that. So, you were addicted at this time when you came back from Philadelphia. Where would you get your stuff?
Anyway, you come right back in the same connection.
You got the same connection, this older man that you know.
You might know him if I could call his name. It's not necessary.
That's not necessary. But the main point is that you always had this connection that was able to get you good stuff at a reasonable price. Mm-hmm.
But earlier you said, or at least I think you said, that during the 60s the dope started to get bad.
Dig it, because of the new people jumping into the game, and they wasn't using the correct cut. The dope was good, maybe, but they instead of them getting the Bonita and the medicine quinine, they was getting crude quinine, which is wrong, and using the dextrose, which is a surface substance, and that was a little small hole in the spike that you just have to, you don't hurry up and get with it, it's like gone. Like a three. That's what happens.